could ease your heart away.
All right, and tonight we're going to talk about education. And our guest here in the studio is Pastor Stan Archie. A lot of people will be familiar with that name. He pastors a local church and also has done a lot of things in Kansas City, including was on the Missouri State Board of Education. And he's busy right now putting on headphones, and we're trying to get his all his stuff to work for him. But we'll just have him identify the name of his church, which I've forgotten, actually. It's over about 44th or 45th and Truce, right, Stan?
Yes, it is 4509 Truce.
Yeah, and the name of the church?
It's Christian Fellowship Baptist Church.
All right, well, if you could, while we're still trying to get everything adjusted, if you could just give a brief introduction, the other things that you've been involved on here in Kansas City, planning-wise, education-wise. You've been involved in Kansas City community for years and years.
Well, I have been able to enjoy working with some of what I consider the greatest people in the world, definitely the greatest people in the country. And I have served with several mayors, being on the City Planning Commission for several years, probably about 15 years. I have been able to work with both the charter school movement, been able to work with initiation of Common Core, been able to spend some time working as the central director of the National Center for State Boards of Education, working with both the Bush administration and the Obama administration. So, had good fun.
All right. Good credentials.
I just wanted to let you know, if you're listening and you would like to join the conversation, the call-in number here is 816-931-5534.
All right. And Khadija, why don't you lead off with some questions for Stan tonight? And as she said already, you can call in. We'd love to hear from you. Anything about Kansas City education, and most particularly the divide, as we might call it, between the urban core, the Kansas City, Missouri, or KCK, but most particularly tonight, I think we're going to focus on Kansas City, Missouri School District. If you have thoughts about that, call us again. Khadija gave the number once. It's 816-931-5534. Take it away, Khadija.
Well, you know, I like to talk about the landscape of Kansas City. Uh-huh. And, you know, the first thing I asked you was about Southwest High School.
Yes.
And your tenure on the school board, you know, was it during the time when Southwest just went kind of haywire? And we talked about that a little bit, but why don't you give us a little bit of that when you were on the school board, what Southwest was like?
Southwest went through a lot of what I would call testing. Different strategies were put in place to try to resolve some of the reason why it was such a disconnect from both the educational world and the community around it. I think those elements contributed to the deficiency that we see there. But I think what you're talking about is the biggest, I think, drop or movement toward disarray that we saw was during the time when Covington was the superintendent and decided to and he reduced the number of schools serving the community, serving Kansas City, and combined two rival communities together. Unintentionally, I think, but nevertheless, it was a reality, and it created within a school system or within a school building two rival communities, and it just kind of fell apart in a lot of different ways socially.
Okay. With you being a product of Kansas City, Missouri school districts and going to Southwest, mm-hmm. and seeing how it's changed and being able to see a predominantly white school when you were coming up and knowing that education was probably really important to people in that school, mm-hmm. Can you see the difference in the way that school operated and other schools operated within the Kansas City, Missouri school district? And at that time, do you think it was a fair shake? And, you know, being that a lot of the schools were African American, mm-hmm. you know, and that school being predominantly white, we know it changed over time, but mm-hmm. at that time, that was the peak of Kansas City, Missouri's education, you know.
I do recall a vast difference. In fact, I would probably define it as a culture shock, moving from Southeast high school to Southwest High School right before the busing kicked in, because First of all, the cultural dynamic was very, very different, and it was clearly seen that the affluence was very prevalent in the school when it comes to the books you received, the equipment that you received, the opportunities that were offered, and the culture itself. So it was a difference that I didn't know existed, being having gone to urban schools all my life and then transferred into this this area where the culture was very, very different, and it was very clear that there was a clear disparity between what opportunities were available at Southeast and what was available at Southeast.
I can say for me, I'm a product of Kansas City, Missouri School District, too. I went to Central High School, and I was the first class to graduate out of that new building. It was called Central Computer Unlimited Classical Greek High School. Mm-hmm. And I remember having an exchange student program, and we went out to Lee Summit. Mm-hmm. And Lee Summit was the only high school out at Lee Summit at the time. They didn't have any trailers too many or whatever. And I remember taking a look at that school and seeing the opportunities they had right away. I mean, every kid had a locker. There was only 12 students in every classroom, but it was a huge school, so I couldn't comprehend that. Mm-hmm. What else I could not comprehend was how they had Taco Bell and Burger King and Pizza Hut and stuff right there in the school. I mean, we went through a line. We got one tray. You better pick one or the other. So I right away knew that there was something different. However, I didn't know how it broke down until I got older, like the tax dollars that came into the community versus what went into that community and how you have to battle and fight for the kids. I didn't understand that concept. Can you share a little bit of that concept with us?
Well, I mean, I'm probably going to say some things that are very controversial here, but I think they have become my belief over a period of time. First of all, I see Brown versus Board of Education kind of helped us address the issue of desegregation that really kind of plagued our country following the Jim Crow era, which ended in 1965. Following that, prior to that, you had strategies, laws and systems that were in place to promote the segregated beliefs that we had as a country. Following that, those ideologies, I think, poured into the decisions that were made about desegregation. And one of the things that seemed to be prevalent was that if you're going to have equality, you got to figure out a way to have white people sitting next to black people so black people can get the same quality education that white people are having, rather than to say, let's take a Black Wall Street approach and ensure that equality takes place, then it was, you got to mix them together. And white folks weren't interested in coming to the hood.
And when they did, they rolled up in their taxis, mm-hmm. and their chariots, mm-hmm. and they were quickly leaving once it was over. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it didn't look like a picture that was going to last.
Right.
You know,
right.
It was a good thought.
Well,
and the school was state of the art. Central right. High School was state of the art. It was a good thought, mm-hmm. you know.
And I mean, I think it was bad ideology. It was the idea that my equality depended on you sitting next to me not only affected the system that I was in, but it also promoted the ideology that was in the Jim Crow era.
If you are tuning in and you are listening to us on the air right now, you can join us by calling 816-931-5534.
And really any question on education and the inequality, the inequities of education between the urban core and suburban America, and they exist probably in more than just Kansas City, but we're very familiar with that here in Kansas City. So I wanted to start out tonight with a question which is really rhetorical, because I think everybody out there listening agrees that there is a tremendous divide and that we are not getting educated, the folks in the urban core are not getting the same education as kids in South Johnson County and many other areas of Kansas City.
And I would say not only just Kansas City, but in my tenure as Central Director of National Association of State Boards of Education, this became clear that this was an issue across the country and that our recipe for resolution kind of exacerbated the problem even more. So we faced that. I think here's the one thing I think that whenever we start talking about this topic that I think is problematic, and that is that the system is what's creating the problem. And the system was from the 1800s all the way up to 1965. And whenever you mention it, many whites take such a responsibility for it that there's a sense where they feel like they need to be apologetic or defensive, which I think, you know, if I worked at the post office and the post office treated someone bad, then if the system caused that to take place because of the way the protocols were in place, it doesn't mean that every employee is bad. So I don't need an apology from every employee. I just need people who are interested in changing the system.
They call that good customer service.
Yeah, they call it customer service. I don't know if they call it good customer service. But I think that when you broke down the monopoly, then the customer service got better because people said the system needed to be different. But prior to that, the system was not really favorable to the customer. And I think that
we're not customers, African Americans.
Well, I think that we are a constituent of a product.
Okay.
The education that we receive is a product that we are a constituent of, and we pay for that through our tax dollars. So, in a sense, we are the customers. We are the consumers of what should be offered to us. And the thing about it is, when I come into the system, I want to be equally valued and treated the same way.
But that's according to the demographics within your community.
It's
those dollars are chalked up, right?
Well, the system.
When it comes to, let me just try to explain a little bit, if I can. When it comes to each child, there's a dollar amount behind each child. And every time a child leaves, that dollar amount decreases overall what we have in the pot. Right.
Right.
And so significantly right now, it's a challenge with the numbers.
Well, actually, what you have is a system that was put in place. And that system is called a formula, and the formula is what dictates how each child is supported.
I like the way you broke that down. And we have a caller. Maybe you can break his answer down like that.
All right, if you could give your name and tell us what area of the city you're from. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Charlie. I'm listening on the Internet from Tulsa.
All right, thanks for calling in, Charlie.
Well, yeah, I wondered if you just heard this program on NPR, it was like on This American Life or something, and they said the one way that you can improve schools is to integrate your schools. And they told stories, they gave some evidence about back when they had busing to integrate schools. It really helped kids, and it helped raise the schools all the way around. And that the one set of data they got that actually does the job to improve our schools, whether they're public or whether they're those charter schools, is to get that integration. It raises everybody.
I love that.
Anybody hear that program? It's an incredible program.
I did not hear the program.
And they were talking about in the Ferguson area, too, back when these kids could get out of that terrible school in Ferguson and go to another school, it just did wonders.
Yeah, so I think part of that, and we'll ask our guest about that. But, Charlie, thanks for calling in tonight, all the way from Tulsa.
Yeah, see if you can find that program on a podcast or something, because it's really enlightening. It's great.
All right, thanks again for the question, and now we'll Pastor Archie address that.
Well,
thanks for the program. Great program.
All right, thanks, Charlie.
Mm-hmm. I do appreciate the call and the perspective. I think I'd be interested to find out statistically where the data is giving that perception. My work in St. Louis and throughout St. Louis was demonstrated that those schools that were desegregated, and not only just in St. Louis and Ferguson and Wellston and some of those areas, but throughout the country, have not shown the benefit that we expected the desegregation would show. And again, I would say I think that it's based on a philosophy. If the problem is we're not offering equal opportunity for education, and we think that the solution is put different kinds of people in there, then our assumption is that without those people, we can't have equal education. And I think if that's the case, then something about the system is pointed towards giving some people an advantage that other people don't have. So it should be that whoever is there, if the system works, whoever is there should be able to get equal benefit.
Whether it's integrated or not, it's basically what you're saying.
Exactly.
But one of the things I think the caller, he did not make this point, but this point has been made often, which is that higher expectations is what results in better education. And that is just one factor. But do you agree with that?
I do agree with that wholeheartedly. I think also higher education is, and this is going to sound controversial, I'm sure, but higher education is going to be based on your ability to understand the community. So therefore, if we, through our academic standards, weed out everybody who has an opportunity to understand the kids, then everybody's there is going to give expectations based on perception. So when you take me as a black kid and sit me in the room with all white people, since we're coming off of 1965, then that means their perception is what they've been taught in America since the 1800s.
Right.
I can't learn like the other kids. So how can you expect for their expectations for me to be equal?
That's a great point. Yeah. How old were you when you started getting bussed?
I graduated in 1980. So we were in the 70s when the bussing
started. But would you say all that was just semantics when it came down to it? Because if kids had the same opportunity, I mean, they had the same science books, they had the same math books, they had almost the same curriculum, and the same tools, that they would have almost an even advantage, not in the perception outside of the classroom, but within that world of the classroom, that their world would be different if they had the tools or the monetary support that supported tools that they needed in the classroom. So, for instance, we're in a computer age, and almost everywhere kids are getting, you know, computers to take home.
Mm-hmm.
That's not happening in the Kansas City, Missouri school district like it is in other districts where their curriculum is solely based on this computer technology, you know. And so our tools are very different, and well, so we're making do. So don't you think that it's...
I think that contributed to it. Let me kind of throw a kind of a monkey wrench in that discussion. I think first thing, what you have to do is you have to be able to create a community that reinvests in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if we didn't have all of the tools that the people have, the fact that I have to live in a world that's not mine is part of my problem. So even if people who look like me educate me, they have to educate me about a world that I don't get to experience, so I'm already at a disadvantage whenever I enter into that world. White people don't have to live in our world, so therefore they're not at the same disadvantage. And so now what ends up happening is you're trying to teach me to survive in my world and to live in their world. If our dollars stayed in our community, mm-hmm. and we had kind of a Black Wall Street and built ourselves up, then you would have a very, very different experience, not only in the classroom, but also in the world in which we live. And then I would have a choice as to whether or not I want to engage in that world or not.
Well, let me just tell you, that's no monkey wrench. That's mm-hmm. the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you on that.
Well, I got to ask you, now, are you proposing that or just saying theoretically, if it were so, that would work?
I'm saying that evidence shows that it has worked. And the result of that was, of course, an attack on the affluent community in Tulsa, where former caller was from. And so look up Black Wall Street or anybody else if listeners want to look at the history of that. So we've proven that it has worked. However, I think that if we became a marketable community, then the way you begin to excel as a community is to have a value that you can export so the dollars will import into your community.
Just to be honest, education for African Americans didn't come by way of wanting them to be educated. Came by way is what we're going to do with these young Black African Americans from the time that our kids go to school to the time their kids go to school. So they have to have their separate entity to do the same thing, seemingly.
Right. Yeah. So I think, so when we teach our kids to live in a world that's different from theirs, then one or two things happen. If they become educated, they leave their own world to try to get a piece of the privileged pie.
Mm-hmm.
Or either they become incompatible with their own world to be there, or either they learn to be effective in their world and they don't fit outside of that world.
So what do you think of the Nation of Islam's theory of teaching their own? I mean, you know, they've been doing it for years. Sister Claire Muhammad mm-hmm. is a well-known Islamic school around the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do think that there is a value and a proven benefit to teaching your own, and not only Islam, the Catholics did it, and I mean, there's groups have decided that we're going to teach our own because we want the same ideology in our own people. I do think that here's the benefit, I think, of teaching our own in America. Until America write the history books to reflect true history,
mm-hmm.
then we don't know what to fix in America. So the fact that most of African-American history and the dilemma was treated very differently from the Holocaust means that most of the white Americans don't believe that slavery was the way it was. So I think that until white America integrates truth across the board, then I think we have to figure out a way to survive on our own. But I think when that happens, true integration can begin to happen across America because all of us are now after the same solutions.
So when you say true integration, you mean a time when you have integration and people really do think of each other as equal and they treat each other as equals.
Right, because you begin to recognize what things we need to do better as Americans and not necessarily what we need to do better as whites and what we need to do better as blacks.
Yeah. See, I mean, you're making a great distinction here, which is that, you know, integration as we have known it in this country is not what you're talking about now. You're talking about true integration where it's not just a guy gets planted next to you in the classroom and you don't know who he is and you don't even understand him. It's we all understand each other because we are truly all one community.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
If you are listening and you want to join us, call 816-931-5534. So my question to you is do you think that affects America globally in the financial world? Because really, you know, when we think about things, it's really about the big financial mm-hmm. pie in the sky. Right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, they say often that America is dumbing people down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does that make us any more better or any more significant in the world?
I do think that there are ways in which we compromise our ability to be intellectually sharp. Number one, we have tried to shadow. We've tried to camouflage the true America. I mean, we don't want to really look at what things we need to fix to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, our civility is compromised. Meaning
would you refer to that as like propaganda?
You know, some of it's propaganda. Some of it is we just didn't, those who wrote the books didn't want their kids to know how bad things were. There's a recent study that just came out and began to reflect the devastation of lynching and how bad it was. I think if we understood that in America, black and white, we would start thinking about what policies we need to put in place to create equality.
Mm-hmm.
And those Absolutely. Are the kind of policies that will, I think, drive America toward the kind of unity that we're looking for, rather than to try to, because you have one black America and one white America because you have black history and white history. And it's not because people say, well, why do you have black history? Well, because you left it out of American history.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, if you put it all together, then we would have American history, and then we would be able to think differently about it. The reason why we don't have a second Holocaust is because we taught it, and it's in the history books, and we understand
it's too devastating to have again.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's slavery
let's just put you to sleep this time.
Yeah, slavery is okay. You know.
Right.
Yeah, I hope we can get at least one more caller. And this is so interesting. This is really putting a great spin on it that I've never heard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a spin in the negative sense. I mean, this is like, let's look at it a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
I want to bring up a point, though, trying to change it a little bit, mm-hmm. because I had a speech pathologist in my salon the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling her that I've taken speech classes. My daughters have taken speech classes. I really didn't start reading until probably about the fourth or fifth grade because mm-hmm. I couldn't hear sounds that well. Yeah, you're probably not an expert in this, and neither am I. But she raised a pretty good point about African Americans and their ability to read at a young age. And the reasons why is because we just hear different. And she thinks that most of us do. And she wants to do a study to see if that's the case. Like, maybe our ancestors, you know, the history that we had of our language is still a remnant of who we are. Mm-hmm. And so it makes us difficult when we're trying to understand the English dialect in our reading. And so most of the time in schools, she made this point too, is that, like, when you're pronouncing the letter A, they only give you one way to pronounce it when there's several ways to say A, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, so when you're pronouncing words, we're not getting the full understanding of the language. And therefore, because we have that hearing of the dialect differently, mm-hmm. we often are behind in the reading. I thought that was very interesting. It also went to my psyche as part of your insecurity of mm-hmm. why you can or can't do something, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe it isn't you. Maybe it is mm-hmm. something that goes deep beyond that. That's a thought.
Here's my response to that. I think I don't have enough, insight background to understand whether or not that's a reality or not. Here's the thing I do see often is, if you take a kid who plays volleyball all day and then plays volleyball on the team at school, mm-hmm. then that kid is going to have an advantage at school. If you take a kid who plays basketball all day and then plays volleyball at school, then that kid is going to have to be good at two games, which means that it's going to compromise their ability to be very, very precise in one. Mm-hmm. I think the same thing happened in dialogue. When I went to Southwest, I had to talk a different way. When I went home, I had to talk a different way. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, the people who talked that way all the time were better at it than me. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the difference was that the cultural dynamic in my world caused me to have to speak a certain way, and the white people who went to school with me didn't have a different way to speak when they went home. So mm-hmm. they had an advantage. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, the books were written based on their way.
Right.
Rather than my way.
That was
a good explanation.
Yeah,
Thank you. That's a great way to explain it.
Thanks. We're running out of time, and I wanted to get to this charter school business just to ask Pastor Archie real quick. You know, a lot of people are against charter schools because they are for public education. What are your thoughts on charter schools and their role in the Kansas City, Missouri school district?
I think charter schools are, first of all, I think charter schools are public education. I fully understand why many of my colleagues, especially in the urban American, will have fussed at me for years about my lack of resistance against charter schools. Here's the dynamic. I also serve on the City Plan Commission, and I've served on it for 12, 15 years or so. One of the things I clearly see is if we did not have, at the time charter schools kicked in, if we did not have an alternative measure of education, then the number of families that we would have lost in the city would have been greater. I think the ideology of bringing back, the hope of bringing back neighborhood schools in some way or another really kind of salvaged some of the people that we would have lost. So I think in a bigger scheme of things, it needed to happen, and I understand that it does create an internal competition that causes frustration amongst those who are for traditional public schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, final question, because we're almost out of time, a little bit over about 2 minutes. What do you think, Khadija, just before we go off the air?
I think education is important. I think ignorance is bliss. And I just hope that someone who's listened to the conversation finds some answers to what they were looking for. And I also want to thank Stan for coming and participating. He has enlightened me and educated me so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, this is the way it is with Stan all the time. I've known for, 12 years, 12, 15 years? Yeah, and every conversation is like this. We'll definitely have to have him back on. Right before we leave, we got about a minute, so you got less than 60 seconds to do, if you can remember your stew analogy you made, which it's really good.
I talked about a vast difference between having a melting pot, which means everybody becomes the same, and a stew pot, which means everybody brings their value to the table without compromising their individuality. I do think that if we simmer in the same stew pot, we create a much greater flavor, and nobody has to not be who they are, but it is the contribution of everybody that makes the whole thing better.
I love that.
Wow.
So yeah,
you gotta be hungry. No.
Yeah, exactly. And it's such a great metaphor. You think, you know, a carrot is still a carrot, but it adds something to the mix. And if we could get everybody in the community to add something to the mix, what a richer stew it would be.
I mean, the simmer part. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Without having to apologize for being a carrot.
Exactly.
The thing is, if just because you're next to potatoes doesn't mean you have to apologize for being
I'm the meat. No, I'm just kidding.
I love it. Well, Fork DJ Hardaway, this is Keith Washburn, and thanking again Stan Archie. You've been listening to Khadija and the White Guy on KKFI 90.1.
Supporting 90.1 FM, Kansas City Museum's Summer Concert Series, featuring Sad American Night, Friday, August 14th, 7 to 9 p.m. on the lawn of Corinthian Hall, 3218 Gladstone Boulevard. Sad American Night, performing a wide array of their pop music from Middle America. Kansas City Museum's Summer Concert Series, Friday, August 14th, 7 to 9 p.m. All information at kcmo.gov/Kansas City Museum.
In Northwest Missouri, right in our own backyard, more than 3,000 children have suffered from abuse and neglect. These children need nurturing foster families to care for them until they can return home safely. You can help. Become a foster parent. For more information, call Healthy Families at 855-SRV-KIDS or go to their website, healthyfamiliesforkids.org. This message is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Gene Clark grew up in Kansas City and went on to form the Byrds and after that help invent country rock. The KC premiere of the first documentary film about his life and times will be screened as a KKFI benefit at Knucklehead at 8 p.m. on Friday, August the 7th. Gene's brother David Clark will be there to answer questions after the film. Tickets are available at the door or online at knuckleheadshonkytonk.com.
Supporting 90.1 FM, Grammy Award-winning saxophonist Kirk Whalum is coming to Kansas City Thursday, August 6th at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. Kirk Whalum with vocalist John Stoddart and Kansas City jazz artist Angela Hagenbach. Thursday, August 6th at the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. Benefiting Kansas City mentoring organization for girls, Awesome Ambitions. Tickets at ticketsforless.com.
Welcome to another broadcast of Shots in the Night. Are you a woman? Do you know a woman? If so, then you may appreciate what we have to say. Is there a drug that can make men understand their wives? Or can technology help women with bad dates? What if Caitlyn Jenner had a slumber party? To find the answers, stay tuned for our fabulously feminine show.
Tonight's cast includes Ron Dennis, Roseanne Devine, Sally Downing, Mary Girls, Mark Nagy, Ralph Tomlinson, and Mary L. Wilkins, featuring special guests Dane Zeller and Jim Downing. For full script and music credits, visit our website at shotsinthenight.org.
Sally and Jim have retired for the evening. Sally often suffers from insomnia and an overactive imagination, and therefore, so does Jim.
Jim? Jim? Jim, are you asleep? Jim!
What is it? What, is the house on fire?
No, I was just wondering if you were asleep.
I'm not now.
Oh, good. I need to talk something over with you. There's some stuff going down.
At this hour? It's 3 a.m. Please, let me go back to sleep.
Well, it's not my fault you ignored me all day.
No, it's not your fault. I was busy working all day. And then I had to mow the lawn, fix your dinner, and do the dishes. Then I had to walk all the dogs and mend your dresses. I'm so sorry. I didn't have time to listen to you flapping your gums about some new crazy thing you're up to.
You don't need to make a federal case out of it. I forgive you. Besides, it sounds like a good thing I waited for a quiet moment to tell you about this new development.
What new development?
I got this in the mail. Isn't it pretty? It's an invitation to a slumber party. I've really hit the big time.
Aren't you a little old for a slumber party?
What do you mean old? You're always raining on my parade. Slumber parties are the latest thing. Of course, you wouldn't know that because you don't keep up with the trends, do you?
When would I have time? And adult slumber parties were so last decade.
Anyway, you'll never guess who's hosting this party.
Okay.
What do you mean, okay? Aren't you going to guess?
You said I'd never guess, and I'm good with that, so good night.
Quit being so contrary. Caitlyn Jenner has invited me to join her slumber party at her swanky mansion in L.A. Me? Oh, I can't wait to go and share all my womanly secrets and beauty tips. What's that supposed to mean? Guess you're referring to the fact that I'm not as young as I used to be. I guess you think I'm beginning to look like an old hag.
I wouldn't say that.
You wouldn't say what?
I wouldn't say you were beginning to look like an old hag.
You emphasized the word beginning. I don't like what you're implying here.
Okay, I wouldn't say you were beginning to look like an old hag.
That's it, Buster. You'll be singing the blues soon enough when I get on that plane to L.A. Obviously, Caitlin thinks enough of me to invite me over and seek my advice and wisdom on what it means to be a real woman. I can't wait to share this Adam and Eve catalog with her, along with all my recommendations for personal pleasuring devices.
You do know that her innie is still an outie, right?
What on earth are you talking about?
Never mind. You'll find out soon enough. Have a nice time in L.A., dear. Now, good night.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Daisy Raises the Question, highlighting women's issues in today's world. I'm so excited to introduce our guest, a man I'm eager to meet. But first, let me set up our question of the day. The women's U.S. soccer team recently won the World Cup and won Best Team at the 2015 ESPY Awards. But did you know that professional women's soccer players are paid thousands less than their male counterparts? These women earn a paltry $6,000 to $30,000 a year, while the range for men is typically $85,000 to $250,000. What is the reason, and what can be done about this huge discrepancy in the professional soccer arena? Clyde Barflunk joins me with an answer to this pressing question. Welcome, Mr. Barflunk. What say you about the terrible discrepancy between men and women's professional soccer salaries?
Call me Clyde. Thanks for inviting me, Daisy.
Clyde?
Well, you know, Daisy girl, most experts agree that the women teams don't get the sponsor revenue that the men get. The games are just not as interesting. So I propose that the women have to give us men folk more of what interests us.
Oh, I'd say that Carly Lloyd and her teammates gave the viewers an exciting World Cup match.
Well, sure, but any men's soccer team can do the same. I say, give the viewers, especially the male variety, something more tantalizing.
More tantalizing? What do you suggest?
Oh, a little pregame showdown and a few dance numbers by some well-endowed cheerleaders would get things rolling.
Cheerleaders?
On a halftime show with a guaranteed costume malfunction. Oh, that would help ratings. The audiences would know it's a-coming, just not exactly when.
Incredible.
Yeah, I agree. And get some wagers going on as to what part of the costume derails and during what dance numbers. It'd be tantalizing fun.
You certainly have some.
Oh, I got more
ideas.
Here, let's give the women each a hockey stick to smack around just before the game begins. Show their rivalry.
Wait a minute. With all due respect, what you are suggesting, Mr. Barflunk, would change the game of women's soccer to be...
Oh, yeah. It would be a change, all right. Little ladies of soccer.
Sorry, Mr. Barflunk, but I don't think we're on the same page here.
You got my name on your page right there.
I do see your name. I'm sorry, listeners, but I must have misplaced a page or two about our guest's background. I feel blindsided here.
More like short-sighted, I'd say.
Excuse me?
I've been very clear, Daisy girl. If you can't think straight, maybe it's that time of month.
What?
Oh, my bad. You obviously are years past having those times a month.
Just who booked you? Was it Mark? Sally?
Who?
The hosts here at Shots in the Night. One of them booked you.
Of them? Nah, Gary got my name down on your paper.
Gary?
Who's Gary?
Gary Grant, my second cousin. He's head of maintenance in this building.
Oh, well, of course, if Gary the janitor thinks...
Hey, head of maintenance. Get it right.
No, you get it right. This is the 21st century, Mr. Barflunk.
Men are still men, and women are still the weaker sex.
You obviously belong in the 1950s.
Having a little trouble wrapping your mind around all this? You need a real man. I've been a loyal listener.
We are just about out of time.
And I've been just waiting to show
please
you.
Please join us next... What are you doing?
Just let me show you. You're going to be impressed.
Help!
Sir, you'll have to come with me.
Hey, let go of me. Oh, come on. Oh, let me get my pants
now. We have to go now.
Oh, come on. Ow, hurt. Let me get out of here. Let's go. Stop.
Well, that was enlightening. Listeners, please join us next time when Daisy raises another question. So, what's the in the mail today? Bill, junk, junk, da junk. A letter to Rosalina Bellini. That's a me, from a Caitlin and Jenna. That's a newer girl. And I knew me newer girl. Oh, boy, she's invited me to a slumber party, a sleepover. She says she never had a no sleepover when she was a little boy. So now she's inviting her new girl of friends to her house. So who's coming? Annabella Boone. Good. She'll bring a booze. Inez Kokoruda. Damn Croatian, she'll drink all of the booze. I gotta get her there early and fill her my flask. Uh-oh. Sally Downing is coming. She's gonna liven the party with her Adam and Eve party goods, like the Dilla Pickles or Dilla Dallies or Dilla Doughs. So, we're gonna arrive, we're gonna drink a little, and we're gonna change into our pajamas. And we see each other naked. I gotta see that a Caitlin's a hoo-ha. Is it a like a mine? Did they leave some of them boy parts on? Is a Caitlin a one of them hermaphrodites? I gotta see that a hoo-ha. How would to do it? How would to do it? I'll wear my baby dolls, and I'll say, Caitlin, now that you a girl, you want to wear girly things, like girly colors. How about you try on my baby dolls, my pink panties? Oh, we can play truth or dare, and Caitlin will say, dare, and I'll say, I dare you to show us your hoo-ha. And she will, because she'll be all licked up on a Hannibal's rock gut moonshine. What if she says truth? Then I'll say, is it true that they left some of them boy parts on your body? Show us the truth. And she will, because she'll be all liquored up on a Annabella's Rothacus moonshine. Now, where's the demo baby dolls with the pink panties?
Ma, what are you doing in there?
I'm getting ready for a sleepover with that new girl, Caitlin. I'm going to see her hoo-ha.
What? What do you mean you're going to see her hoo-ha?
I'm gonna trick her into letting me see what she looks like now that she's a new girl.
Ma, she didn't get that operation. She left herself intact. She didn't feel the need to change.
What? She's a girl on the top and a man on the bottom?
Ma, it's more complicated than that. Just leave her alone. Let her be who she is.
How can I? I don't know who she is. Ooh. If she's a man on the bottom, maybe she wants to see my hoo-ha. Now, where's the damn baby dolls with the pink panties?
Hi, you must be Sharon. You texted that you'd be wearing a big skirt and red heels. I almost missed the heels. Never pay too much attention to shoes.
Yes, I'm Sharon. It's good to meet you, Roger. I like the red blazer. You don't see too many men willing to wear a red sport coat.
Well, you don't meet many men like me. Let's go find a table. I'm starving.
Sounds great. I took a walk for lunch. I hope they have a vegetarian entree.
Oh, so you don't eat meat? Hope you don't mind that I do. Don't care for rabbit food. Need lots of protein to keep up with the guys.
That's fine. I promise not to preach.
Good, good. I used to hunt. Never missed a deer when I was hunting, but that was a long time ago. Now when I go for a walk in the woods, it's on the golf course. Love to get out there and chase that ball early in the weekend. Best way to spend a Saturday morning.
Really? I'd rather go to the park.
No time for that. Here, take a seat. Let me tell you a little bit about me. I'm a lawyer with Batten & Dorf. We do corporate law, make a lot of connections playing golf, and I'm good if I do say so myself. I don't remember the last time I scored more than 75.
Uh-huh.
Just last week I was playing with David. He's a judge for the district court. And we just hit it off. He's a great player, too. Never known him to go over par on a hole. He's just amazing.
Uh-huh.
Yep, you just can't beat a game of golf to bring people together. Nothing like it. Well, tennis, perhaps. I do play tennis, but it's hard to socialize playing tennis. Sometimes I play handball or squash, but I really don't know that many other people who play squash.
And ladies, we know how difficult it is to date, especially when you depend on dating services and online connections. It's not always easy to listen to a man talk about himself for an hour or more over dinner. And sometimes, when you just meet someone for a coffee, that caffeine really gets them going. God knows what they'll ramble on about then. That's why we invented the electronic conversation monitoring device. It tells you when to say those little words that men need to hear, like, uh-huh, oh, really? That's nice. Just listen to our demonstration.
And how about those Royals? What a team. I bet they make it to the World Series again this year.
Say, uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
They've got what it takes. I used to play ball. Almost became a pro. But I decided to get my MBA instead. Did I mention I have an MBA?
Say, oh, really?
Oh, really?
He'll have no idea that you're not really paying attention. Call now and get our luxury model for the same price as our standard ECMD. With the luxury model, you not only get prompts of what to say or when to nod your head, you'll get real-time news you can use in between those prompts. Just listen.
Yes, I was CFO for CDM for nearly 10 years after I got my MBA and my law degree. I knew I would be more marketable with both. It's unlocked so many doors, but I prefer to practice law. Not as many headaches, less responsibility, and no employees clamoring for a raise.
Say, that's nice. And in other news, Donna Karan said today she's discontinuing her Donna Karan clothing line for women. Many professional women depend on the Donna Karan line for office attire. Her less expensive, sporty line of clothing, DKNY, will continue. ECMD, you don't need to pay attention. Order yours today. And stop listening to all those self-centered men in your life.
Oh, Lanyard, this is so exciting. Look at this. Your Auntie Inez received an invitation to a sleepover at Caitlyn Jenner's. The invitation says it's a night in celebration of womanhood. In a handwritten note, she added that she wanted me there because she always enjoyed my cooking show and its honest approach. Oh, I'm so excited. Oh, Lanyard, honey, hand me my cigarettes. Oh, not those, the menthol ones. You know I'm trying to quit. Oh, I know. I'm trying. Give me a credit. I'm down to a little under 2 packs a day and decide to help me calm my nerves. Oh, look what else she wrote. I have a deep feeling we secretly have so much in common. Ooh, look here. She put a little winky smiley face besides it. Oh, I guess she realized I too have an outgoing personality and am athletic in my own way. Oh, you tell your daddy having a short haircut and lifting weights does not make me a butch. You tell him your auntie is a full-figure woman. Sometimes I think my brother is just jealous of me. Oh, Lanyard, look what Auntie Inez bought to wear to the sleepover. Oh, you're going to make me blush. They're called baby dolls. At least I think they're still called that. Or maybe they're called teddy bears. Oh, let me take off these pumps. Oh, and I'll show you what the manicures did to my feet. See how they twinkle? The polish is called Midnight Sparkle. What, honey? Oh, that's something special only Auntie Inez will have. When the girl painting my nails found out it was a sleepover and I'd be barefoot most of the time, she glued rhinestones on my bunion pads. Oh, I know, I'm so excited. Lanyard, Auntie is going to need your help with getting into something she bought for this occasion. Okay? Oh, thank you, sweetheart. You know you'll always be my love of my life. Let me give you a little hug. Oh, you're turning as red as the lipstick I just put on your cheek. Here, take this tissue and turn around and wipe your face. Well, you need to turn around because Auntie's going to slip into something special, and she doesn't want you to see her, but you will have to help me fasten it after I get it on. Don't look now, don't look. Okay, now you can turn around. Well, how does it look? Lanyard, you've seen a bra before. Yes, I know it's big and black, and it does make me look a little, well, as you say, pointy. But everyone there will be so young, and Auntie needs something to lift her spirit. It's called an orthopedic brassiere. It will look perfectly all right under the nightie I bought. What I need for you to do is help me fasten this thing in the back. Here, Lanyard, get behind me. Help me pull these hooks together. Oh, that's it, honey. Oh, pull real hard. Harder. Harder. You almost got it. You got it. Oh. Oh, thank you, sugar. Here, hook these other two. There. Now let me turn around, and I'll show you just how. Oh, Lanyard. I didn't know you were right behind me. I didn't mean to hit you with this bra. Oh, baby, are you all right? Here, let Auntie help you up. Oh, don't forget your glasses. They're right beside you. Oh, Lanyard, I feel so ashamed. Who am I trying to fool? Lanyard, where are you going? What? Oh, sugar, you don't have to do that. Well, maybe just a small drinky papoo. Oh, thank you, sweetheart. Oh, you sure know how to take care of your old Auntie Inez, but I should be taking care of you. How's your poor little head? Oh, yes, you are tough. You're my strong, brave little man, and I love you. Now you really are turning red. Oh, my gosh, look at the time. I need to finish dressing, and you need to gather your things so I can drop you off at your house. Oh, Caitlin may be one of the most courageous people in the world, but I'm one of the luckiest aunties in the world. Well, don't just stand there smiling. Let's hurry up. I still have my eyelashes to put on. Lanyard, grab those snacks I made. It's a new recipe I'm trying, you know, peanut butter with tuna and guacamole on rye. Oh, they should go good with my new and improved watermelon and pumpkin margaritas. Well, yeah, I think you're right, Lanyard. This will be a night to remember.
Miagra. M-E-A-G-R-A. Male eradicating abnormal gender-restrictive attitudes. Just one pill a day, and women, he'll understand.
Women. I just don't get them. Yesterday, Margo and I were going to the mall to do a little shopping for some items we needed around the house. I waited nearly 20 minutes after Margo went upstairs for just a minute to change. I spent half my life waiting for her to change her clothes or decide what to wear. What could she possibly be doing all that time? My God, it's just the mall. I don't get it.
Oh, man, they take forever.
It's just a pair of jeans, and how many shoes do they need anyway?
You might as well sit down and have a drink if they ever go to fix their hair or makeup.
I hear you, brother. Last night, I got home an hour after Beverly got off work, and I simply asked, when will dinner be ready? You'd have thought I asked her to plow the South 40. She yelled at me to hold my horses. It would be at least another hour. An hour! All that time to make a pork chop, mashed potatoes and gravy, and some vegetables. Heck, even at Larry's Diner, it only takes 20 minutes to fix a meal, and he has 25 to 30 tables to cook for. I don't get it.
How hard can it be to boil a potato?
Just dinner they're fixing, not a banquet.
The store does most of the work nowadays.
That's nothing. Liz is going through that, that change of life thing. Oh, you know, menopause? That's what they call it. Yesterday it was pouring down rain, and Liz decides to mop and wax the kitchen floor. I came home, and like I said, it was raining out, a real mess, so I tracked in a little mud on the floor. I tried wiping my feet on the mat, but I guess there was still some mud on my shoes. It was a mess outside. Liz gets all hysterical, shouting to, "Look at the floor!" I told her, "Who cleans a floor in weather like this?" So she sits down at the table. folds her hands on the table, puts her head down, and begins to cry. I don't get it.
Yeah, the mood.
Nothing's ever right.
You sneeze and they're upset.
And the thermostat is never set right.
And how many times can they say they have a headache?
Ladies, does this sound familiar? I'm Dr. Ruth Johnson, and I have the solution to your problem. When a man says, I don't get it, he's telling the truth. You see, over the millennia, the female brain has been evolving. Females have gone from childbearer, gatherer, and servant to childbearer, homemaker, teacher, nurturer, healer, and social organizer. While males are still hunters, gatherers, procreators, and protectors, the latter beginning to fall to the wayside. So how can we help women help our fellow humans to catch up? It's as simple as taking a pill once a week. Through nuclear evolutionary biogenetic engineering, science is able to take a leap forward and reprogram the male brain to integrate with the cognitive processes of the 21st century. I know it sounds all so technical, but let's hear from one of our satisfied customers.
You heard what life was like every time my husband and I went someplace. He was constantly complaining, always imposing some imaginary deadline about me preparing to go anywhere. Our marriage was falling apart. That's when we both decided to visit Dr. Ruth Johnson. She gave my husband a trial sample of her male eradicating abnormal gender restrictive attitude pill, Miagra for short, and well, just listen.
Take your time, dear. I know how important it is for you to choose the right outfit and look good. I'm proud of you when you look your best, and thanks for picking out my clothes to wear tonight, too. You're so thoughtful to take all the time you need. I understand.
Here's another testimony.
When Margot told me about the change in her husband, I knew it was time I took matters into my own hands. I got Miagra in powdered form and slipped a little in my hubby's coffee, and what a difference. Just listen.
Hi, honey. I'm home. It sure smells good in here. Beverly, you take your time with dinner. I don't know how you do it. Work all day and still manage to get the dinner on the table. I'm the luckiest man in the world. Some of those schmucks at the office have to eat at Larry's Diner. Poor guys. Nothing beats home cooking. Tell you what, after dinner, I'll draw you a nice warm bath and I'll take care of doing the dishes. How about a foot rub? It's the least I can do. I understand.
Results are even easier than before. Now Miagra comes in an aerosol spray.
Ladies, if you're like me and going through the change with hot flashes and sometimes dealing with mood swings, you don't have time to put up with all the craziness a husband can bring up. With just the press of a button, you can fill the air with pepperoni pizza-scented Miagra. What man can resist taking a big sniff? I call it instant relief.
Oh, no. Now, what's the... Say, something smells great. What's the matter, dear? You look a little sad. Someone as gorgeous and wonderful as you shouldn't look so sad. I know how we can solve that. Let me take you out to dinner tonight. I know what the problem is. You work too hard. Just look at this house. It's immaculate. No arguing. Tomorrow I'm hiring a maid. Now, my precious angel, grab your coat. And let's go to dinner. And on the way back, let's stop at the jeweler's. And you can pick out a little something to help those tears go away. I owe you so much. I understand.
Well, there you have it. Miagra, the male eradicating abnormal gender restrictive attitude relief therapy prescription. My only question is, what are you waiting for? Live the life you are meant to live. There are very few and only slight side effects. Miagra can cause slight depression, moodiness, and feelings of inadequacies for not being able to give birth. These usually disappear after the third week and can be alleviated by cuddling and watching the Lifetime Network. Miagra is approved as a female drugs alternative, the FDA.
Oh, this is Lumber Party. Hello, it's Annabelle Boone out here. I've got a 7-gallon jug of cherry moonshine. I snuck through 3 dry counties to get here. Where is everybody? Caitlin? I knew I missed that turn in Malta Bend coming up from Poplar Bluff. Oh, I suppose you'd be held in gender band for a girly man party like this. I tell you, in all my born dead, I know.
Thanks for listening, Radio Theater fans. We hope you gained a greater appreciation for the female condition, or at least laughed your pantyhose off. Tune in next month for more girly giggles and maybe some male rebuttal, too.